All right, welcome back in. Hour number two of the Buck Rising Show here on a Friday. Nick Cale and Braden Gall hanging out today in for Buck until 1 o'clock. 104.5 The Zone, Zone TV. 615-737-1045, the number. You can check us out on Zone TV if you want to see two guys that were truly meant to have faces for radio. So the evolution of radio is not, it's not really pointing out our
strengths.
Appreciate
you saying two guys.
Well, I think he was referring to you.
I mean, I can barely see you. I feel like I'm in the penalty box in like at a hockey game. Like I got 2 minute misconduct, and I can barely see out into the ice.
I am very comfortable with the amount of handsome I am, so I don't know about you boys, but I'm fine.
All right. Well, confidence is the first step, I guess.
There you go.
I'll find it eventually.
It doesn't matter if it's true. Just say it enough times.
Yeah. If there's anything we've learned over the last couple, just say whatever you
say
believe.
Whatever you
just
want.
Keep fighting for it. Yep. All right, 737-1045. We got Mitch Light coming up in just about, let's call it 16 minutes. He is from The Athletic, senior editor for both college football. But we're also going to talk to him about College World Series stuff with Tennessee and Vandy. Started off the show with that. We got to a little bit of the Titans with Julio. Coach Mack will join us in the final hour of the show. But we just got into it for about 5 minutes before we wrapped up the first hour about the college football playoff expansion, which we'll be coming in a couple of years. We're going to go from 4 to 12. And you were going to make the case about why it's good for the middle class of the conference that we pay attention to most.
Yeah, and I mean, if you love another conference, them too. But it's good for the middle class of college football, especially the upper middle class. Teams that have no chance. Like Ole Miss, if you go back and retroactively add the 12-team playoff to the regular playoff in the 7 years, you would have had two Ole Miss teams that made the playoff. A Mississippi State team would have made the playoff. Florida would have made it three times under Dan Mullen. And it's not that Florida needs any help because they're a premier program, but you're telling me Ole Miss and Mississippi State can get into the playoff as it sits now with the four teams? Like, no chance. No chance. And neither does Kentucky, South Carolina, Arkansas, Missouri, any of those teams in the SEC. They don't have a chance to get in. And so if all of a sudden, remember that Kentucky team a couple years ago that was, I think they were 10 and 2 maybe? They went up to Knoxville and they got beat after they lost to Georgia.
Yeah.
And if they had beaten Tennessee and they finished 10-2, they might be a number 10 team in the nation that gets into the playoff. And all of a sudden, that's a football team that they probably celebrate on that campus forever. Like, and that's the key here is we're keeping more fan bases engaged for longer. And in the process, creating a ton more meaningful football games.
But
as a college football fan, I'm sorry, eventually you have to come around on more good games, more meaningful things to celebrate and watch. And
well, look, I'm going to watch
for the sport.
There's no question I'm going to watch, and you know me well enough. There's no question I'm going to gamble on all these games. There's no doubt about it. So I'm not trying to paint it in such a negative picture as if I'm like going to oppose it and I'm going to, you know, boycott it. But you're talking about the engagement there, and I thought that was an interesting word that you used, because so we're going from 4 to 12, so you're going to have more people that are engaged for a longer period. But I also feel like if you go back to the beginning of the BCS and the creation of that in 1998, so we went from basically the national championship in the polls era and other bowl games.
The Bowl Alliance,
which was ridiculous.
Yeah, stupid.
And we had four BCS bowl games. So you had eight teams that were in the BC. We made a BCS bowl game, the FedEx Orange Bowl, you know, Sean Alexander against Tom Brady, Michigan, Alabama. Okay, cool. But after a few years of making BCS games, if you're 10-2, you get bored with that after a while, and you don't have a chance for a national championship. So let's say we get to 2023, we get 12 teams, and the 10 seed feels great, the 7 seed feels great. But by the time 2025 and 26 rolls around, and those teams that are anywhere from 6 to 12 have quickly realized we still don't have any chance to win the ultimate prize, aren't you going to get to the point where your engagement dwindles a little bit?
Well, I don't know.
I'm thinking out loud.
I don't think so as a fan, because again, whoever, like, again, 7 versus 10 is going to be most of the time is going to be a pretty good football game. 8 versus 9 is going to be, that would have been Georgia Cincinnati last year, and they played in a bowl game and it was really good. Yep. And some of the best players didn't even play. So imagine with all the best players, what that game could have been. Oklahoma, Florida last year. You know, imagine if Kyle Pitts and Kadarius Toney play in that game, because they didn't. And all of a sudden, that's a playoff game, like in Norman or in the Swamp. Like, I just think you're talking about a lot more stuff that's meaningful. I still think you're engaged, because here's the other thing. What the playoff does for the big boys, because we talked about it, what it does for the middle class. What it does for the big boys is it gives you a chance to kind of get hot at the right time. And if you're a team that gets hot at the right time, like, let's say you lose in week one, maybe you stumble in week four and you're 2-2, but all of a sudden you've recruited at a high level. So you're Georgia or A&M or Florida or Tennessee or Penn State or Texas or whatever, and all of a sudden you catch fire right in week five, and it starts to click, and all of a sudden by the end of the year nobody wants to play you. Well, if you're a 7 or 8 or 9 or 10 seed, and you've recruited at a high enough level that you've got dudes, there's nothing to say you can't go on a run and win an extra game and get to the championship game. Like, if Georgia's an 8 seed and catches fire, they've got enough players to compete with Clemson and Ohio State and Alabama. So
they're one of the few that can recruit at that level.
It doesn't automatically mean that it's just still Bama, Georgia, Clemson, or whatever. Like, it's – you are giving – like, LSU in 2019 2018, the year before they won the national championship, they would have been number 11 in the rankings. Right. You want to play that team? It was hot down the stretch. Joe Burrow was starting to find his footing underneath himself.
True.
He hadn't had his breakout season yet, but that LSU team was playing really good ball in November. You think that LSU team in 2018 as an 11 seed couldn't be dangerous, knock off a 6 seed, and then play somebody in the playoff as a 4 or 5 and maybe beat them? Like, absolutely it could happen. So I just think you're creating more opportunity. You're creating – again, I'm with you. I used to hate expansion. I have now seen it. You cannot have everybody west of the Mississippi not named Oklahoma checking out by October.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot have that in the sport. It's bad for the SEC.
So, I mean, basically what we're saying now is that college football and the SEC had a monopoly, and it was capitalism, and that's bad for the sport. So now we're just basically changing the way the sport will conduct itself to allow everybody to feel like, hey, I'm a part of the party as well.
And the money goes up for everybody. The access is really increased for everybody else. The SEC access doesn't really change. They got a bunch of teams into the playoff. They're still going to get a bunch of teams into the playoff. It doesn't really change for them all that much. What's really interesting about this and this entire concept is also, like, again, hopefully there's talent dispersion as well.
Mm-hmm.
The idea is that, let's say all of a sudden you have four SEC teams making the playoff every year, and it's a rotation of, like, Bama's in every year, but then it's a rotation of Auburn and LSU and A&M and Florida and Georgia and Tennessee and whatever, right? Like, let's say it's a rotation the other five or six teams that sort of have that ability. All it takes is for each one of those teams to peel off one dude from Bama in recruiting.
Mm.
You're not asking people to out-recruit Alabama. What you're asking for is one guy to go to LSU instead. One other guy is going to go to Georgia instead. Maybe a third guy goes to Auburn instead. And all of a sudden, Bama's lost three players. And so that's what you're trying. That's the other angle to all this, is the talent dispersion over time hopefully takes place, that there's more access and more coaches can go out and say, look, come play for me. You got a chance to play in the playoff. And if more coaches can say that in the SEC or outside, ideally you peel off a guy in recruiting from Ohio State, from Bama, from Georgia, and all of a sudden maybe there's a little bit more talent somewhere else. And that's the other residual effect of all of this, hopefully.
So let's look at, and we've got the Athlon Sports College Football Preview Magazine. As I'm going to put this up here on Twitch, give it a little publicity. You should definitely go out and buy it. It's pretty damn good. So let's just look at, based on what you guys are projecting right now, Alabama 1, this is preseason poll. Alabama 1, Clemson 2, Oklahoma 3, Ohio State 4. Fine. Georgia at 5, A&M at 6. And then you have Iowa State 7, Cincy 8, Oregon 9, Carolina, North Carolina 10. Florida 11, Notre Dame 12. Based on the, let's just say those were the 12 playoff teams, and we had the 12 team expansion this year, and this was actually the seeding in the format. How many of the quote underdogs in the preseason top 12, and let's just say that's the format of the playoff, how many teams do you think truly would have a chance to win this national championship in the expanded format?
The whole thing?
Yes.
Probably not. Maybe Georgia. Again, number 5. So the matchups will be Notre Dame at Georgia.
Correct.
In Athens. Okay. Sign me up, please.
We just had that a year or two.
Anyone have a problem with that?
Yeah.
Number 11, Florida at number 6 A&M. Just saw that last year. It was awesome.
Yep.
Anybody got a problem with that?
No,
but both of those teams are good enough probably to make a run. North Carolina at Iowa State. That one's a little unique because they're not football brands and they happen to be in the same game, but those are as good as North Carolina and Iowa State has ever been. Like, they're as good as those programs have ever been. Oregon hosts or goes to Cincinnati. You want to find out about the group of five?
Mm-hmm.
You're telling me that's not the Pac-12 champ versus a group of five champ in Cincinnati? Sign me up for that. I want to see if you can actually do it. Put your money where your mouth is, group of five.
Mm-hmm.
You've been complaining about it for years. Now you get a chance to actually prove it.
Yep.
Oregon's coming to town. Let's see what happens. So, like, again, like, all of that stuff is fun to watch as a football fan. You get all of that. And then It's Georgia versus Ohio State. All right. Okay. I'm good. Then you got either A&M or Florida playing against Oklahoma. All right. I'm good. Sign me up. Like, again, we can keep going on this.
This time, Florida versus Oklahoma with players on the field.
It keeps – or A&M versus Oklahoma. Hell yes, please. Like, it just keeps getting better. Like, you can't – again, I was – it took me a long time to come around on this. It will not hurt the regular season. You old people that think the Sugar Bowl means something to people, it is not going to affect the regular season in a negative way. It's going to affect it in a positive way.
Yeah.
You're taking a tiny bit of juice off the top of the games, the top five or eight games of the year, but you're adding 40 more meaningful ones. And that is the point. Like, you know how on Saturday you used to sit down, and if the biggest game was a flop, you feel disappointed, right? Because you're like, oh, number three versus number six wasn't as good as we thought it was. It was a blowout. Ohio State destroyed Penn State. Well, now you got six of those games every Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't have to guess which one it is because you know because you're looking at the rankings. Everyone in the top 25 is playing for a playoff spot every week. Think about that. That is what makes this really, really good.
But haven't we said that the college football does have a playoff? It's called every week of the regular season. So is that really anything new here?
No, but now there's official stuff around it that allows you to go and hang a banner if you're Iowa State. It allows you to go recruit if you're, you know, if you're A&M or Georgia or Florida, whatever. Like, you can, it just allows you to do more stuff. And oh, by the way, and here's what's really happening, of course, you're making a whole lot more money. That's really all that's happening. There's a whole lot more money.
All right, guys, it is Dad's Week on 104.5 The Zone. Right now, be caller number five for your chance to win a pair of tickets to see Three Doors Down with special guest Seether at Ascend Amphitheater on September the 25th. Be caller five right now, 615-737-1045. Caller five will get to go see Three Doors Down. If Lucas Panziga doesn't come back with a little kryptonite on the other side, I will be very disappointed. Mitch Light, senior editor for The Athletic. He'll join us to talk college football expansion as well as the College World Series. That's next. Buck Rising Show. Nick and Braden in for Buck on 104.5 The Zone. Welcome back in, Buck Rising Show, 11:22 on this Friday morning. Nick Cale, Braden Gall of 440 Sports in for Buck today as we take him until 1 o'clock on 104.5 The Zone. Coach Mac, Dave McGinnis, 1 hour from now. We'll get back to some Titans conversation to kick off the 12 o'clock hour. Mitch Light will join us in a moment from The Athletic to talk college football playoff expansion as well as the College World Series. Father's Day weekend, so much to get to. We got one of the studios on here in the TV's on. Yeah, the TV's in the studio.
Yeah, there you go.
Well, now what am I watching here? Because I'm not a soccer guy.
This is the Euros, man.
Should I be impressed with what's going on here?
This is Croatia versus the Czech Republic, not to be confused with the artist formerly known as Czechoslovakia.
So we got UEFA Euro 2020. Now, why does it say 2020? Is this a replay?
Well, so it was scheduled for last season. They actually added. This is too much information. Lucas will enjoy this. Euros is as good as the World Cup, if not a little bit better, and they expanded it to 24 teams, I believe, last year. In 2020, and then they had to pause it and push it back a year. So now it's this year, but it is awesome, man. If you don't like watching the Euros, I'm sorry. I know we're trying to beg people to get into soccer in this town with SC and everything, but I love international competition.
There's nothing like it.
What's interesting to me, though, is
don't watch Copa. Copa's not any good.
Not as good, but it's fun.
Best teams are good, but I don't need to watch Bolivia and Ecuador.
Yeah, but I feel you there. But there's 10 teams in that tournament that just know each other so well, and there's a lot of animosity. But I'm with you. It's not to the level of the Euros, but this is awesome. Where soccer's at its peak, these international competitions.
You got Croatia -1.5? What do you got?
If I knew what the line was, I would bet on it.
I know you would.
All right. Let's go and welcome our buddy Mitch Light into the show, senior editor for The Athletic. When it comes to college football, he's going to talk some college football playoff expansion and also some College World Series action. Mitch, good to talk to you again. How you doing, pal?
I'm doing well, Nick, and I can talk soccer for about 30 seconds, but my soccer goes back a long time. I have two claims to fame. I was at the 1978 Soccer Bowl between the New York Cosmos and the Chicago Sting at the Meadowlands.
Wow.
I went to the 1994 World Cup match with, I think it was Mexico and Uruguay at the Meadowlands. So after 94, that's the end of my soccer viewing.
Pretty cool, though.
Most people started watching soccer in 94, Mitch. You just stopped right there.
And one more. As a freshman at Vanderbilt, my first beat was the covering women's soccer. I showed up to my first match as a freshman, probably like a week into my tenure, showed up 10 minutes late. It was 1-0. Game ended 1-0, and I still don't know who scored the goal.
Excellent reporting on your part.
Exactly. Set the tone for the rest of my career.
And that's how a career starts, folks.
For the Hustler, no doubt, as well.
Yes, exactly.
Always fun writing for the Hustler. So we were talking expansion, Mitch, and you have sort of imparted this upon me over the years that you and I have worked together, and that is that it's the shortest regular season in all of sports. It's magical. We hold it in such high regard. We want to protect it at all costs. But with expansion, it does affect a little bit about what happens in the regular season. But you have sort of long said that you believe that it doesn't hurt the regular season. So now that we have expansion, explain your opinion on why the regular season still holds the value that it does.
Well, it affects the regular season. It changes it. But I still think there is so much to play for all of these teams. The Alabamas, Clemson, and Ohio States of the world. Sure, they're going to get in, barring a disaster or just, you know, one of those once in every 7-8 years that they lose three games, God forbid, although that doesn't seem to happen to those teams. But you're still playing for a bye. So if you're Alabama or Ohio State, and you might not think that regular season game with Texas A&M or Michigan State is as important as it was because 5 years ago that could derail your entire season, well, now you might not get that bye. So I still think there's so much to play for. There's still this new proposed format that they're putting a importance on winning your conference championship. So it's important for those next tier of teams, the Iowas, the Michigan States. Even that's not a great example because Michigan State's already made it. But the Ole Misses of the world, Kentucky, maybe even that have appearances in the top 20 and top 15 at times. Now maybe they can sneak into the top 12. So more of their regular season games are important. So I think it definitely affects it. But to me at least, I don't think it lessens the significance of the regular season.
Mitch, when I first saw this news, my immediate reaction was, okay, there's a lot of people that are saying the format has gotten stale. We're tired of seeing Alabama, Clemson, the four-team thing's just not working. It's run its course. And then I said, okay, well, I understand this is about money. People are going to make more money. And oh, by the way, it'll appease other people that more people are invited to the party. But if you're going to give me the stale argument, it's stale. You know, the same teams every year. Well, what happens 2 or 3 years into this format if we're still going from 12 down to 4 and we're getting the same four teams and it's like, okay, well, your staleness thing is still an issue. Like, what do they do then? Or is that something we're just going to have to deal with?
Well, I think you have to deal with it. You can't legislate out of dominance, if that makes sense. Like, I think we're still going to have, for the most part, the same teams. But it just makes the entire tournament or the event more interesting. Like, we always say with the NCAA tournament, we love the upsets and the Cinderellas in the first 2 or 3 rounds, but we want to see the top teams battle it out in the final four. And I think that's still going to be the same. I think that's what's going to happen. So I like the more inclusion. I think this is another topic, but I actually think it's going to help to some degree, help in recruiting, allow more teams to kind of elbow their way in with more top 50, more five-star, maybe not five-star, but more top 50, top 100 prospects. So Nick, I see your point there. But I just think inviting more teams in or allowing more teams will give us as viewers some more layers and some more interest in those first couple rounds.
All right. Neutral sites in the third round, fourth round, and fifth round. I guess it'd be the quarterfinals, semifinals, and national championship. Is there any way to solve this problem? It is pure cronyism at its finest. It is absurd to make people travel 4 times in 5 rounds if you add the championship game in. Do you see the athletic directors coming to their senses on this and the conference commissioners and presidents and maybe allowing some, you know, why would the top 4 teams get a bye and not get to play a home game?
Right.
It just doesn't make any sense.
That's my biggest problem with this. And who said it? I forgot. Was it, you know, who wants to go to Michigan State and, you know, see a game at Michigan State in December or January? Like I do.
Michigan State does.
Yeah.
What are you talking about?
If it's like a conference, I know the Super Bowl is on a neutral site, but conference championships in football, you work all season, especially if you're a cold weather team, to host a game to make it miserable for the other team. Now, I get it, most Big Ten sites are cold, but I just think that would make the sport that much better to have such meaningful games on campus sites. And kind of, as you referenced, Braden, it's absurd that the top four teams aren't going to have that extra home game that the teams five through eight are going to have. And that could affect, I mean, is Alabama hurting for ticket sales? No, they're not. But if you are a top four team or a type of program that can, that's going to be in the hunt to get that bye, it's a nice thing for your season ticket holders, or it makes them in more demand that, hey, if you're a season ticket holder, or you pay this premium, or you pay this to the booster club, you're going to be able to buy a playoff ticket. It's a flaw. Like you said, I don't know if it will be fixed because of the cronyism that you referenced, but I sure hope so.
Mitch Light, senior editor for The Athletic, College Football, joining us here on 104.5 The Zone. Mitch, one more for me on football, and then we'll get to the College World Series. You know, you look at the Athlon Sports preseason top 25, and I'm just going to give it to you real quick, the top 12. Bama, Clemson, Oklahoma, Ohio State, Georgia, Texas A&M, Iowa State, Cincy, Oregon, North Carolina, Florida, Notre Dame. If we had the 12-team format this year, and those were the teams that made the playoff format with expansion, do you see any, I mean, some of these games early on, like, I'm a degenerate, I'm going to watch and I'm going to gamble on them, I'm going to love them. But I take a step back and I say, can 11 seed Notre Dame really win three games and get to a national championship or do the whole thing? And I don't think that's the case. Do you see any chance early on in this thing of there being upsets with the way it's kind of positioned to go moving forward?
Yeah, that's a good point. Good question. Yeah. I think sometimes we look at the field and the climate of college football with the same teams getting in, but not every Ohio State team is created equally. Not every Clemson team, you know, sometimes in the 4-team field, it might be the same four or five teams, but only two of them are truly dominant. So I can see scenario like Notre Dame has made it twice as a 4 seed. You can argue whether they deserved it. Getting blown out by Clemson in the semifinals doesn't mean you didn't deserve it, because Clemson that year would have blown out every team. So right. I can see a good but not great Notre Dame seed as a 5 seed 1 year, losing to a 12-seeded Florida team or an Oregon team. So if we have these truly dominant super teams like we've seen in recent years from an Ohio State 1 year or an Alabama or Clemson, no, I don't think those teams are going to lose. But I could definitely see some first-round upsets with some not-so-dominant 4 or 5 seeds.
Let's switch to the College World Series. And I think it's amazing for the state of Tennessee that both Vanderbilt and Tennessee – are not only in Omaha, but I think you could argue are the favorites to get to the national championship series in each half of their bracket. What do you think happens to this state and the dynamics between the two fan bases if they are playing in the national championship series?
That would be great, obviously, for college baseball in the state. It would be, it's such a weird dynamic between the two fan bases, because Vanderbilt in this one case, in this one sport, is the one that kind of puffs its chest out and it's like, oh, we've been there. We know how to act. We know you're supposed to wear suits to travel to Omaha. And Tennessee's like just having fun. They're wearing shorts and t-shirts and their fans are going crazy. I mean, it's not the same thing, because obviously Tennessee as a fan base is much bigger. But Braden, you were around in 2007 when the regional got here for the first time and Vanderbilt was ranked first. And it was just this huge deal and people were just hanging from the rafters trying to watch that team.
Sean Kelly versus David Price.
David Price, yes, just one of the underrated pitching matchups we've seen in this state in decades. So, I mean, I think Tim Corbin's genuine when he says it. He thinks it's great for baseball in this state. It's an underrated state for high school baseball. The one thing about the dynamics of these two teams, like, see if this makes sense. Like, in the state of Mississippi for football, there's not, even though high school football is good there, like, it's rare that Ole Miss and Mississippi State could both be good at the same time. It's just the dynamics of the sport and the way it's recruited. But Tennessee being good and Vanderbilt being good aren't really going to – there's room for both, because both teams will recruit locally, but both teams also recruit nationally, especially Vanderbilt. Look at Tennessee's roster. They've always done very well in Florida and up and down the Eastern Seaboard. People ask me, will it hurt Vanderbilt? Well, there might be a couple kids that Vanderbilt traditionally has gotten over the past 5, 10, 15 years that might go to Tennessee now, but I don't see this slowing down Tim Corbin's recruiting machine. And if you look at the way Tony Vitello's recruited, that's going to stay, and he'll keep attracting top talent there. So I think it'll be fun to watch these two fan bases go at it if it does happen. And like you said, it's very real that it could happen. Vanderbilt is the betting favorite on its side. Is Tennessee still? It might be Texas. But those two teams are clearly the best two on that side.
Mitch, if Rocker and Leiter are not on their A games, can Vanderbilt still win this whole thing?
It depends on the bats. Now, the bats have been a little quiet the last couple of weeks. Now, you can attribute that to some very good East Carolina pitching. And you know, obviously, in the SEC tournament, you're going to find some good pitching. If Locker, I do that all the time. Ooh. If Rocker, let's say, good. Yeah, has trouble finding the zone and walks a few guys, hits a guy, then there's a three-run homer. Arizona is a good, has a solid staff, but they don't have that ace number one starter. So I could see Vanderbilt scoring 6-7 runs. Like, so I guess my point is Vanderbilt could beat Arizona 4-0, 4-2, or they could also beat them 8-7 or 8-6. So obviously that is the strength of this team. And if both of them are on as they've been the past couple of weeks, then that gives them a great chance. But I would say they can still win if they're not at their very best. And one thing, I think it's kind of fashionable to say, oh, Vanderbilt, after, you know, those two guys, the staff really falls off. Well, their third starter hasn't been great, but Patrick Riley, he's also a kid that, you know, threw, I think, two-hit Alabama, beat him 7-2 through eight innings in that game. He is quite capable as a third starter. He just hasn't been as consistent.
Are you concerned if you're a Tennessee fan? Because even lighter for Vanderbilt, like his one weakness has been giving up the long ball because he throws so hard, and like that's sort of neutralized by TD Ameritrade to some degree. If you're a Tennessee fan, are you concerned that your style of offense doesn't translate? Is that the only real concern? I mean, pitching depth is another one, but is that a problem for you?
I would think so. Playing in the smallish ballpark at Lindsey Nelson, they hit a lot of long balls, but also if you watch them play, they also hit a lot of balls that go like 20 to 30 feet over the fence or over the batter's eye there. So it's not like they're hitting cheapies. But I think that would be a concern. And this team has played so loose and so confident. It's a veteran team. I don't know if this is that big of a deal, but and I just listened to your interview with Tim Corbin. You know, having been there and done that, I think is a factor. It's just a different environment in Omaha. You know, Virginia as a program, they're playing a Virginia team that's, again, Virginia hasn't been there since 2015, so none of the kids have been there, but the coaching staff has been there. And I think that makes a little bit of a difference. So for Tennessee, I guess my concern would be the newness of it and the point you make about them kind of relying a lot on the long ball.
Mitch, I've got our Zone TV comments section up right now here on one of the monitors in the studio. And we've got a guy asking, are you John Madden's great grandson? Because your voice is identical to his.
Wow.
Really? That's a compliment, right?
I think so. Compliment. I think it's a compliment, but I think you have like a feminine version of John Madden's voice.
That's not a compliment. No, it's not. Yeah, I've been told in the past I sound like Andrew Luck, but I don't think my voice is quite
enough. He's the actual host of the show.
So
like Mitch's voice on Buck Rising's face, and you have Andrew Luck.
Yeah, there you go. Really? I thought it's more. I guess that's true. You got Luck's got he's like, oh, he's got like the.
I don't want any part of me combined with any part of Buck Rising. Put it that way.
Amen, brother.
There he is.
You and everybody else in the world.
Mitch Light, senior editor for The Athletic. Great to talk to you, pal. Have a good summer.
As always, guys, take care.
There he is.
Thanks, Mitch.
MJ Snyder 95 had the comment on the Zone TV comment section. He said, absolutely a compliment.
Okay, all right.
I was literally trying to like close my eyes.
I try not to compliment Mitch any chance I get.
Yeah, it's bad form out of you. John Madden.
I can't hear it, man. I've worked with for and around Mitch for like 15 years, so it's the voice is sort of just like I just hear Mitch Light at this point. He's right. His own brand. I mean, you know.
All right.
John Madden sounds like Mitch Light.
Yeah, exactly.
Dude, those John Madden commercials back in the day when he was doing the
Boom.
Yeah, the tough acting, tin acting.
So stupid.
Does anybody still use foot powder? We'll explore that coming up next. Buck Rising Show. Nick Cale, Braden Gall in for Buck today. We're here till 1 o'clock, 104.5 The Zone. Welcome back in 11:44 here on a Friday morning. It is the Buck Rising Show. Nick Cale, Braden Gall in for Buck today as we hang out until 1 o'clock, 104.5 The Zone, Zone TV. If you're new, Zone TV, you get us on Twitch, YouTube, Facebook Live, Twitter Live. I think Periscope might even still be a thing. Plenty of ways to watch, and of course, a few ways to listen. So, big takeaway I thought from Mitch, at least from a baseball standpoint for me, was, you know, if Rocker and Leiter don't have their best stuff and aren't great in back-to-back successive fashions, the Vandy Bats have to do it. You buying into that?
To his point, I think they can against Arizona on Saturday night. I think Stanford's the team to watch out for in their bracket. Stanford, from what I read, and again, I'm not an expert here, but from what I read is They've got a couple of big arms. They hit a ton of bombs. And that's a team that sort of matches up well with Vanderbilt. I think Vanderbilt matches up really well with Arizona. And NC State, I know what they did to Arkansas last week, but I'm not as worried about them.
Mm-hmm.
Look, Vanderbilt's pitching staff, and it's all relative, right? Like, Rocker and Leiter are so good. They're the top two picks potentially in the Major League Baseball draft and all this stuff. And so it feels like a huge drop-off to the rest of their rotation. I think this was Mitch's point. But, like, Vanderbilt's still Vanderbilt. Like, their rotation is – this is still like Alabama linebackers, right? Like, when the top linebacker goes down –
next man up.
There's still a five-star standing, you know, on the sideline ready to go. And so that is what Vanderbilt's rotation is, and their bullpen and everything. So it is they can get by on one of those guys having a bad outing. But this is – what we're talking about here is – can Vanderbilt win the national championship easily or struggling to get there?
Yeah.
Like, to me, that's what we're talking about here. Because I think Vandy's the team that's going to win it. I think even if they get one bad outing from those two guys, think about how it sets up, right? Like, if you're in an elimination game, oh, you've got the other guy to go.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, if you're, you know, you want them obviously to get two of the three starts in a championship series, you're going to have them for probably three of the four starts in the first round if you need it. I don't know. Like, it's going to be hard to, I just don't think you can beat them more than once.
We will get to some Titans talk coming up again at 12 o'clock. Coach Mac Dave McGinnis will join us from Titans Radio at 12:20. But to start the show this morning, we started with the College World Series. Obviously, it gets going tomorrow. And we looked at it from the Vanderbilt, Tennessee perspective, not so much about what we were just talking about 30 seconds ago with pitching matchups and bats and, you know, depth of rotations, but the rivalry and what could be on the horizon. And it goes beyond just on the field and between the two schools. And you brought up just kind of the stark contrast and differences of fan bases.
The pettiness.
What's looming? That's the great word to use, pettiness.
I don't know what to call it, like the resentment that exists between these two fans. Because, again, this is the one thing that Vanderbilt gets to, like, sort of hold over everyone's head as an athletic department. If you're a fan of Vanderbilt sports, like, the one thing you get to hang your hat on and celebrate and sort of look around the league and say, we are the best. We are the Alabama of college baseball.
Right.
We've been to Omaha five times in a decade. We've won the national title multiple times. We're the guys churning out first round picks every single year that go on to be studs in the major leagues. We're Bama. And now here comes Tennessee, you know, like, coming out of nowhere. Now, I will say, if the whole thing had not been canceled last year, I think this Tennessee run would feel a lot less sudden. Because I think last year's Tennessee team was actually even better than this year's team. And so I think last year's team probably would have had at least a regional experience or super regional. I don't know if they get to Omaha or whatever, but I think that would have made it feel like a more gradual process for them. This has felt so sudden because we didn't have last year. But this was coming for Tennessee. Like, mm-hmm. They were good last year. And so this is class warfare. This is, we want to rub your nose in it. This is, we're better than you. This is, we look down at you. Like, this is bragging rights. This is state dominance. This is, I mean, again, there's so much more mental warfare going on at play between these two fan bases than, like, anything I see from, like, Bama and Auburn or, mm-hmm. you know, Georgia and Florida or whatever. Like, there's sort of like regular old hate in those other rivalries. There's something different with this, and I love it. Like, it's, Tennessee's the villain. Vanderbilt's the team that's been there and done that. And it's so much fun. I hope we get to see it in the championship series, because I think it's great for the sport in the state,
mm-hmm.
but it's also going to be great to watch the fan bases go at it. Like, just it'll be so petty. I can't wait.
Now, he's got a national championship from 2019. He's got one from 2014. And maybe this is an obvious statement, but I just want to kind of position this in the way I'm going to do this. Is there anybody better at what they do? Whether it's professional player in this city of the two marquee teams that we pay attention to the most, or any college coach or any college player in the Middle Tennessee area, perhaps even the entire state from here to Chattanooga to Knoxville to Memphis and everywhere in between. Is there anybody at a sports level that does their task better than Tim Corbin?
In the state?
In the state right now.
No, I think you have to go bigger than that. I think he's on Saban and Belichick's level.
Yeah.
Like, I think that's where he's at. Like, Tim Corbin, that is. And shamelessly, go listen to my interview with Tim Corbin on the Lamestream Sports Podcast on the 440 Sports Network, out this morning. Go check that out. He has reached a different tier of mental understanding of the game. And this is where I think, like, I wonder about Vrabel, to be honest, because Vrabel is such a football guy. I want, and I don't know, maybe in the NFL, like, it works for Belichick. I don't know. I don't know how much philosopher you can be in the NFL. I don't know, because it's such a different sport with, like, the cap and sort of the salaries and everything being so even across every sport. And in college, you can be a much, you can be much more of a philosophizer, philosopher than you can, like, an X's and O's guru. Like, Nick Saban, he's a teacher at this point. He's not a coach anymore.
Right.
Like, Tim Corbin is a teacher, not a coach. It's about people. It's, and if you listen to the interview I did, he basically said, he goes, you get into this because you love the glove and the bat and the balls and the stadium and being out on the field. And that's how you start becoming a coach. But now it's about psychology and human beings and kids. And going to Omaha for Tennessee, for example, you have to recognize the awe, and this is a quote from Corbin in the interview, you have to recognize the awe of the event and welcome it. And that's something like Saban would say.
Mm-hmm.
That's something Belichick would say. And so I think Corbin is, he's reached like another plateau because mentally he's on another tier. Like he's just, that guy could read the menu to me at like a fast food joint and I would listen to him. Like he's just, he's just that level of dude. And there's not many guys that are like that. There's just not.
615-737-1045. The number if you guys want to jump in on Twitter at Nick Kale, at Braden Gall. Comments are open on Zone TV. You can get that via Twitch, YouTube, Facebook Live, and Twitter Live. We will get to a lot of football coming up in the final hour of the show. Back to the Titans coming up in about 10 minutes. Coach Mack at about 12:20. Just kind of in passing, and we got about 90 seconds here. So did you
not enough for me?
Did you see, well? Not enough for a lot of people. Sometimes it's enough for me. It just depends on the day. Have you seen the new game show that's going to be coming out with Peyton Manning and Cooper Manning? It's called Capital One College Bowl Challenge. It looks like a trivia game show / Family Feud. It's going to be on Peacock, and it's either current students of schools or alums. I saw it yesterday because they were promoting it on the Golf Channel, which is owned by NBC and Peacock, and I'm sitting there, I'm thinking, dude, I get Peyton and Cooper, who I think, by the way, Cooper's
the funniest one.
Hysterical.
Cooper is the funniest one of all of them because he had to immediately, because he got injured, obviously, and didn't get to play and then had to transition into the comedic role pretty quickly. He's the one that sort of is credited, all the guys, you know, Eli and Peyton credit with sort of being the genius of the comedic family. But Peyton has gone to another level. Like he now practices and like he's like an actor now.
Yeah.
At this point. So I'm all in. Give me anything with Cooper and Peyton, and I'm watching. I'm in on it, even if it's a corporate, you know, kind of a corporate shill idea.
It is.
Like, poor Eli.
Who cares? I don't want to see Eli talk about anything.
Nobody does.
I'm sorry, Eli. You got two rings out of the deal. Just go sit in the corner.
So, like, obviously, Peyton's the god of the family. But who would you rather be? Would you rather be Cooper, who kind of feels left out on the football end, but is clearly the funniest? Or would you rather be Eli, who's not remotely funny, but has two titles?
Is this a real question?
This is a real question. Because I think Eli's a doofus.
Right, but he's made millions of dollars and played in the NFL and has two rings.
Yeah, and he's beaten Brady twice.
Am I wrong on this?
I'd rather be Eli.
Yeah.
I think I'd rather be Cooper. I mean, let's face it, Cooper ain't struggling financially.
I don't think he's got Eli's bank account.
Yeah, but he's doing better than probably 98% of human beings. I'm just saying, like, I don't think Cooper's got necessarily a
he's
bad
in the 2%.
Life. He's in the 2%.
He's in the 2%.
Eli's in the 1 or like the 0.5%. Yeah. I would take Eli's bank account, resume, and just liven up the personality a bit.
Okay.
I can just do that on my own.
Okay.
Now, I will say, it's like, how much would you pay if you're not a funny person, though?
Right.
How much would you pay to be a funny person? I think is an interesting question.
And you're going to answer that on the other side, right?
A whole lot of money.
All right. 615-737-1045. Let's come back. Let's get into the Titans. Let's get into Julio Jones. We'll do that on the other side. Hour 3 coming up next. The Buck Rising Show. Nick Kale, Braden Gall. In for Buck today on 104.5 The Zone.